This conference is being recorded.
Hello, and welcome to the Heart Start to Your Week call. It's Monday, January 7th, 2008. I just realized this is actually our first Heart Start call of 2008. So welcome, everyone, whether you're listening live or whether you're listening to this as a downloaded recording. I'm really glad to have you join us. These calls were started almost exactly a year ago. We're coming up on the year-long anniversary of our Heart Start calls. That little beep, beep that you just heard was someone muting their line. So if you're listening to this live and you just joined us, you can mute your phone by pressing star 6, which will prevent background noise from disturbing other listeners. And then later on when we open up the line for questions or you to share your own story, you can star 6 your phone again, and that will unmute you. So my name is Star, and I am the CEO of a company called Fiera. Fiera is a word that I invented after a 5-year search looking for a language to describe what it's like to feel great inside, because I felt pretty bad for a lot of years for a lot of reasons, and eventually stumbled into a company called the Institute of Heart Math and its related companies that were researching the physiology of feeling great and the physiology of curing stress, which they found to be the major obstacle to our lives feeling great. And so they developed a step-by-step process to get us to that Fiera feeling. So we define Fiera as that great feeling you have when your arms fly up over your head and a yes to life flies out of your mouth. And it turns out that not only is that feeling feel great, but it's good for you. It's great for you. The impact that it has on your nervous system, on your immune system, on your hormones, on the way your brain works, your ability to perform and interact with others, that feeling is good for you, it's good for the environment, it's good for your impact, it's very profound and measurable what it does. And it doesn't just have to happen by accident. It can happen by conscious choice. And the power to access a life lived from that place of genuine true joy and peace within comes from the heart. And so these Heart Start calls began as a way for Fiera to give something back to the community. As a client said on the first night, it's like a little oasis of positivity to start your week, to remember the power that's in you, that lies in your own heart, and to learn a little bit about the heart math science and the tools and the technologies and the trainings that we offer here at Fiera that allow you to tap into the heart's power to make a difference in your own life and in the world. And so every Monday night at these Heart Start calls, we look at a different topic and how the power of the heart can help us deal with or transform or enhance our lives in that area and arena. And tonight we're going to look at a topic that has been historically so very taboo. It's not spoken about, and we're going to speak about it. And for that purpose, I've invited a very special guest who I hope will join us on many Heart Start calls to come, Bonnie St. John, who I don't even begin to know how to introduce this phenomenal woman, though, that were in the call last week, heard me talk about her story as this phenomenal person that accomplished the impossible over and over again, being the first African-American woman from a hot climate, i.e. San Diego, but the first African-American woman from anywhere, even though she came from San Diego, to win an Olympic gold medal in the Winter Olympics. Downhill skiing was her sport, and not only did she win a medal there, but she did it on one leg because she's an amputee. So overcoming obstacles is no foreign affair for Miss Bonnie St. John, who just continues to rock my world and our world as a whole. I love you so much, Bonnie, and I cherish you and really appreciate you coming tonight. There are so many things that Bonnie could speak to us about. She just finished a phenomenal book called How Strong Women Pray, and I really encourage all of you to go to Bonnie's website, which is BonnieSt.John.com. Is that
right,
Bonnie?
That's right, yep.
To check out.
B-O-N-N-I-E. And then
yep.
S-T-J-O-H-N.
So BonnieSt.John, BonnieSt.John.com. You can see information about her new book, How Strong Women Pray, there. She's interviewed some phenomenal people. Do you want to tell us who you interviewed, Bonnie?
Maya Angelou, which was amazing, and Edie Falco from The Sopranos, and Barbara Bush, Kathy Lee Gifford, Kathy Ireland, an admiral, CEOs of companies, Christine Todd Whitman, the former governor, and then people who aren't famous, like a woman who was a first responder to 9/11, a woman who saved over 100 people from Hurricane Katrina, just amazing women.
And didn't you interview the woman also that lived in a bathroom or something?
Immaculée. That's an amazing story.
Ugh.
She was in Rwanda, and she hid in a bathroom for 90 days, and that's just the beginning of her story. And she prayed so much. She just got so strong and got so much courage. She later, she just walked through a crowd of Hutus with machetes and just on just like force of will.
Wow.
But yeah, all of
it takes my breath away. Just
all of the stories though are amazing women with amazing strength and stories, and hers was dramatic on that scale. But even when you're just a mom or you're just, just doing whatever you do, we all have those moments.
Mm. Well, and the thing I love about HeartMath is, as soon as you describe her walking through that crowd of tutus with machetes, we know, we can even understand scientifically now, for those of us like me that are science buffs and skeptics, we can understand how that's even possible. Because when someone actualizes such a depth of heart, we've heard stories. I used to collect stories like that when I was a kid of people in riots who somehow their car got through and everyone else's was trashed and things like that. I was fascinated by it because it didn't make sense to me. And then but somewhere in my heart, I knew that we had the power to choose that, to be that.
It's so interesting, too, because I was telling you, I love HeartMath and I've worked with HeartMath, but I never thought about HeartMath in relation to her story.
Mm.
And when she's telling that story about walking through the crowd of Hutus, she says there was one guy standing in front of her with a machete, and she looked him in the eye praying and saying, God, I know this is a human being and there's good in him. And it's like she drew the good out of him. And just in her book is called Left to Tell. So you can read it in my book or you can read it in her book. But the description, when you think about HeartMath, it's like she got him to be entrained in a loving place.
That's it. And we know.
And he dropped his machete and he sat on the side of the road, and didn't kill her.
Oh, I love it, Bonnie. It's so, so very powerful, right? Because their courage, right? The word courage comes from the French word cœur, which means heart. And that ability to see the good in others, even someone who's threatening to kill you in that moment.
Right, and that would be the hardest thing to do. You would think fear, you would think hatred, you would think so many things. But to have the courage to be loving and see the good in that person.
And in fact, it's really the hardest thing to do, isn't it,
yeah.
As opposed to the hardest thing. And we're going to talk tonight about the science of that, because the heart, we know, when it is beating an ordered rhythm, is able to see and perceive the good in others in a way that when we're under stress, whether it's the stress of our lives being threatened literally, like for her in that moment, or the memory of a stress, which is what we're going to in particular talk about tonight, or the stress of a deadline or traffic, when our bodies react to that stress, when our emotions react to that stress, it creates disorder in the heart rhythm. And it turns out that the relative order or disorder in the heart extends at least 8 feet beyond us in an average heart.
Wow.
So that order that she created in her heart of being commitment and a stand for the good in him, that compassion, that genuine openness and care, that creates order in the heart rhythm, changes our perceptual field, but more importantly in that story, it changed him. he couldn't help but get in sync with the order in her. And it's one of the things that brings me the greatest hope relative to what people see as evil in our world. And tonight's topic, which we've alluded to, that we haven't touched on yet, can so often be seen as evil. But one of the things that I love about the heart is that disorder can't be followed. You can't track it. You can't line up with it. So it can't last for very long. Whereas order has a pattern to it. And what they've discovered is that love, peace, care, compassion, forgiveness, which is something very pertinent to tonight's call, that the quality or feeling of forgiveness, all of those things create this order in the heart, which entrains not only other people, but it, more importantly to tonight's topic, all of our own systems. So it brings
I have to ask you, though.
Yeah.
That when you say disorder or the evil doesn't entrain, you know, what about Hitler? You know, he entrained millions. I mean,
for a short time.
But you're saying it doesn't last.
It doesn't last. You can't follow disorder for very long.
I guess the other thing, too, which may be a segue to our topic, is when you have abuse or alcoholism or something in your family, I always go back to the Bible verse, too, where it says the sins of the fathers will be visited on their sons and their sons and their sons. Mm-hmm. And you see that so much. It's like this poison. It's like you are entrained in the disorder and the chaos and the negativity, and it stays and it goes down generation after generation.
Unless you find the heart.
Unless you find the heart.
And the heart is where all that can stop. And I know that because that's really how I came to this. My, you know, I have genocide in my history, which is maybe why, you know, the story of this woman touches me so deeply, standing and facing the machete. My grandfather's level and my great-grandparents died in genocides in Russia. And I felt that I was the generation where that buck stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But it stopped only because I found the heart. And now the order is contagious, and we know that because we have at least 20 people listening to this call live, and who knows how many, right? It spreads, too. And so tonight what we're going to talk about specifically is the power of the heart to heal from trauma and abuse, and in particular from sexual abuse and incest. And Bonnie, as you guys can hear already, we could do a whole year's worth of Heart Start topics on you alone, Bonnie. I'm like sitting here, I'm like, oh gosh, we have to do one for your book. The Heart of Prayer, that would be so amazing. What were you going to say?
I was thinking you didn't tell them that I was missing my leg, but you did, actually. You did tell them my leg was amputated when I was 5.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when you say, you know, it's finding the heart that stops across generations, and what I would say is it's God. And it's interesting because we, you know, you and I will go back and forth about this, too, is when you find the heart and when you find that peace in the heart, I guess, everybody has different words for it or how you come to it. And for me, part of that is God and prayer.
Well, and so the nice thing about this is whether you call it God or whether you call it grace or whatever you call it, from a heart math perspective, just basic science for people who don't have a belief system or a faith to rely on.
Whether you do or you don't, I think you can appreciate the science, whether you have a belief system or whether you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it.
That's just the common denominator.
The bottom line is your whole physiology changes.
Right. I've used heart math. It's really important to me, and I still have faith, and so it's certainly not in conflict. And I think it is, like you said, it's very accessible for people who don't have that as well.
Right. And in fact, it's designed, the heart is like the engine that drives everything. So whether it's your faith or your passion or your commitment to whatever it is that you do, the heart is just the engine, and whatever type of car you like to drive, it works. And so, but faith is what we would call a heart feeling, that when you experience, that's something that measurably creates order in the heart rhythm. And so it's just something that you can observe, that the heart rhythm responds to our emotions, and when it does, it changes everything in our physiology and how we perceive not only present events, but how we perceive past events and look back on them. And what, Bonnie, what you shared about the tyranny of the chaos that family lineages pass down and pass down and pass down, sexual abuse and incest being something that's notorious for being passed down through the generations, right?
Yeah, it was, my mother was sexually abused by her mother's boyfriends, and that was always told in my family. My sister and I were both sexually abused, and our mother was sexually abused. But years and years and years later, I mean, not that long ago, when I realized my grandmother had been sexually abused too, but it was never talked about that way. But the thing was, is she got pregnant when she was 13 or 14, and I don't, you know, to me, that's sexual abuse. You know, no matter how you slice it, it's not really about consenting when you're that young, right? And then they forced her to marry this guy, and he was, you know, he was abusive, and they had two kids, and then he ran off. And but, you know, we were always told, oh, yeah, she got married really young. But later, as I heard that story, I was like, oh, my gosh, she was a child who was raped and then forced to marry her rapist.
Wow.
And I actually heard a number of stories like that, because that's the way that sort of thing was handled back then. And so it definitely goes down the generations, and we have no idea how far.
Well, and whether it's generational for you, and whether your trauma is even sexual abuse, right? Because this call is pertinent to you, even if you have a trauma of some other sort, like your second grade teacher made fun of you and now you're afraid to write, right? Any kind of trauma that's held your present moment experience in the past. Generational past is just a bigger past, right? But it could be your past, what happened to you yesterday, or your past, what happened to you 10 years ago, your past, what happened to you when you're five, or your past, what happened to your grandmother.
And there is so much trauma that we don't always acknowledge or understand how it's operating on us. And I've heard, you know, a car accident can be trauma, or, you know, the death of a loved one can be trauma. And I heard another psychologist saying that a lot of people live in an almost constant state of mild trauma. You know,
yeah.
If you have a bullying boss at work or a verbally abusive husband or something, you know, you can be in an almost constant state of trauma. And
well,
so,
and the truth is you don't even need a bullying boss or any external circumstance to be in a trauma state.
Right, if something, particularly if something in the past is operating on you.
That's it. And this is really what people mean when they talk about wanting to be enlightened. It's the ability to live in the present moment, directly responding to what's here now, rather than perceiving it through the screen door of a past memory, a past filter, or a past reaction.
And I was saying to you earlier, too, Sheva, that I think the hard thing about sexual abuse or any kind of trauma is that it's not just the obvious impacts on you. Like if you had a car accident and you're traumatized by it, it's not just getting into cars. It puts its fingers into so many other areas of your life. Mm-hmm. And particularly with sexual abuse, it's not just about how it affects you sexually. It can affect you at work. It can affect you with your friends. It can affect you in so many different ways. And it took me, you know, until I was in my 30s to understand how it was impacting all different areas of my life and do something about it.
Mm. So what was the first step that you took, Bonnie? Because it's absolutely true, the point being that when we go into a trauma state, what we're calling a trauma state means basically being in a vigilant defense mode, right?
Which I lived in for
yeah,
35
that's
years.
It, because then that permeates your whole approach to everything in life, not just one compartmentalized area of life where the trauma is occurring. So we know that, and one of the things we outlined, by the way, in the Beginner Heart Math webinar, the first class of which is tomorrow night for those who are listening and want to sign up for that, the first class is free. We outline what that state is in the nervous system, in the hormones, in the heart rhythm, in the brain, in the immune system, and how that has this universal impact that you're talking about, Bonnie, and how being able to enter the portal of the heart as one gateway to shift all of those other things, so that the same way that trauma and abuse can be a universal impact, in your life, the heart can be a universal impact to the up spiral side.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it that started your up spiral out of that, Bonnie, out of constant vigilance and defense mode?
Well, the first thing that made me realize something was really wrong was when my daughter started to be the same ages that I was when I was abused. So I was abused from the age of 2 to the age of 7. So when my daughter was 2 and starting to be 3, there was stuff going on in my life. And at first, I still didn't know it. You know, I was having a lot more anxiety. I was having things like she would come home from pre-K or from, it was younger, even younger than from daycare. And I was normally abused, like, after school. When before my brother and sister came home and I would get home earlier, that was when he had me alone. And so that time of day would really trigger my trauma and my anxiety. But at first, I didn't know why. I just knew that I had a lot of anxiety. And you might think, well, this is my first child. I'm just, you know, new mother, jitters, or, you know, I didn't have a benchmark of comparison. But over time, I started to realize that it was out of control and there was something really wrong, and I felt like I was going to jump out of my skin. And actually, what I started doing was, the first thing I did was to go to churches. And I wasn't going to church. I didn't have any relationship with faith at the time. But I just felt like I wanted to go to a church to look for help. And I think part of it was, I really had this huge fear that my marriage was going to break up. And so I really wanted to go to a church because I felt like if I went to a therapist, I would go to a secular therapist and they would just tell me I had to get divorced. And so I thought, I have to go to a church because they will respect marriage and I'll get counseling there and they'll save my marriage. It's interesting. I hadn't really thought about this, but when I was writing the book, my editor was saying there's some discrepancies in your story that just don't add up. And I'm like, well, that's my truth. You know, I don't care if it conflicts, that's my truth. And so to help it make sense, I actually went to my therapist and said, my editor says these things conflict. Tell me how to make sense of this. And what it was is my marriage was so important to me. I was so afraid of my marriage breaking up. But at the same time, I said I was so numb to all my feelings. And he said part of it is that the trauma, when you're that traumatized, you're looking for things to sort of hold your world together. So before I was married, it was I wanted to work on Wall Street. I wanted to make a lot of money, and I felt like if I made a lot of money, I'd be secure. But then once I got married, my marriage was my security blanket. And so I think when I thought about that, it's like I have to get help, but I can't ruin my marriage no matter what. I can't, you know. Part of that, it wasn't just that I respected marriage, although I did, but it was that was my world. And if my marriage went wrong, the earth was going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. So I started looking for help in a church, and she ended up sending me to a hypnotist to remember more of the memories that I didn't know, as I only knew a little bit of what happened. And she said, you need to understand more of what happened so you can process it.
So let me dive in here for a second, Bonnie, so that we can add some of the kind of science and of the heart behind this to understand the process and offer people some hope for themselves. Because you're describing so eloquently, the trauma state basically throws a person into survival mode. And in survival mode, more than 1,400 things happen in your body where you are geared up for protecting your life. And when you're geared up for protecting your life, it requires very different things of your body and your mind than thriving. Right? If you're running from a tiger, you don't necessarily need to sit down and have an intimate, heartfelt, philosophical conversation.
Well, and my survival had always depended on stuffing the memories down, forgetting about it, not dealing with it. It's like, oh, my life is going to be much prettier. Everything's going to be nice if I can just forget about this. But then having a daughter made that impossible. So suddenly my survival instincts were at odds with themselves.
That's so well put. And of course, part of the reason that a child is programmed to feel that their survival depends on stuffing, not speaking about, not remembering sexual abuse is because very often sexual abuse comes with threats to that effect, right?
It's interesting. A lot of people say that. In my situation, I don't think he ever told me not to tell. This was my stepfather who abused me. I think it was just, it was an unspoken rule. He never said a word when he was touching me and doing things to me, and that was the rule. No one says a word. And I think I told you this, Sheva. I went to speak in Ohio, and I was able to speak at a center where they process sexually abused children as they come in, and they built this special center that was more kid-friendly and meant that the kid didn't have to go to the hospital and then the police department and all that. They could go one place and be dealt with in a really careful, loving way. And I was speaking to the staff, and one of the things that came out is that the mothers are usually so destructive as well, and that it isn't just about keeping silence because of the dad or because of the person who's abusing. The mothers are usually so dysfunctional and so unable to believe their child, to be sympathetic to their child, that that's part of what makes you silent as well, is that you're not going to be, you know you're not going to be believed. You know, the children know so much about their emotional environment that I understand. My mother was so emotionally dependent on this pedophile that if I had told her, she might have gone crazy. You know, she might have done something crazy. But the last thing she would have done was to sympathize with me and to protect me.
And I think kids know that.
It's not just the person scaring you. It's the lack of any feeling that you're going to get help from somebody else.
Well, and understand, for a child, their physical survival is dependent upon these adults feeding them, putting a roof over their heads, right?
But let's go back to the heart math connection, too. The heart link is what, and I've read a lot about in the literature in different cases, when you're in a family that's really functional and really loving, And I know a family where this happened, and then there's like a babysitter or something that abuses your child. The child has the confidence to go to the parents and say, This is bad. And the parents say, you're right. And they go and they punish the person. And there's usually, in those cases, very little damage for the kids. The damage comes when they're in an environment with no heart.
Mm. Well, and here's the good news. For those of you who are listening to this call who grew up in an environment maybe not absent of heart, but in a state where the heart was distorted by everyone's fear and stress, which is really what we're saying when we say it's an absent of heart, so that everyone is in this kind of survival mode. What happens when that stressful survival mode kicks in? This, by the way, is how I've come to understand how people can perpetrate acts of incest and sexual abuse, because I've had the amazing privilege now of working as a coach, a counselor, a therapist, and a trainer, both for people who have suffered from sexual abuse as well as people who've perpetrated it, and everyone suffers in it. And what happens is the higher centers of the brain, the centers that can discern behavior, shut down when we're under stress. And what takes over is what I sometimes, for shorthand, call the survival brain, which is really a combination of the hind and mid brain, which is designed for pattern recognition and repetition, and which is designed to help us in an immediate threat. And so what happens in these circumstances where children feel that their survival is dependent upon dysfunctional adults that they can't speak their truth honestly to, is a fracture of internally, a disintegration of how the parts of themselves work. And remember, we said at the beginning of the call, the heart, when you are in a fiera state, which we teach more about in our webinars, but essentially is a state of well-being, joy, inner peace, and enthusiastic passion, all tied into one. When you are in a coherent, we call it from a heart math perspective, heart rhythm, all those disenfranchised parts of yourself entrain. They synchronize into one. You can bring them back home. So the different parts of the brain start to work together again instead of compartmentalizing off to protect themselves. So even, Bonnie, in your story, when you describe, you know, whether it's a church or a friend or whoever you start talking to, that suddenly those places that have been compartmentalized and shoved down aren't disowned anymore. They have a place in your own heart. That one piece that I want to emphasize before I open the space for Bonnie to continue with her story is just for everyone who's listening to know, from a heart math science perspective, it's not actually necessary to dredge up any memories of the past in order to heal. If that happens, it's not a detriment, but it's not necessary to heal because the healing itself literally happens in a heartbeat. It's the presencing of the nervous system, the brain, and the heart and getting everything working together here now, recognizing that the threat is something of the past, whether it's lineage or whether it's yesterday or 10 years ago. And when you bring all of your physiology right here, right now, in a coherent or ordered heart rhythm, your response to this moment is free of the past already. And this, to me, has been the biggest obstacle for both myself and other people that I've worked with who suffer from sexual abuse in their past or some form of sexual trauma, is that the memory itself hijacks their perception of what's happening right now.
Well, and traditional therapies are very much centered on bringing it up. Like I said, I went to the counselor at the church, and she sent me to a hypnotist to bring back memories I didn't even have. And then I went to another counselor to sort of reprocess those memories. And I used EMDR, but what I was talking with somebody the other day, and I said, what's state of the art now? And they said, it's just reprocessing, where they literally make you talk about it over and over and over again until you don't care anymore. Is sort of the philosophy. I'm not a psychologist. I'm sure I'm not summing that up very well. But that's sort of the opposite of what you're saying.
It is, and I don't want to undermine any system that's working for anyone, right? Because there's so many wonderful languages out here for healing, for speaking, for sharing, and everybody will find the language that's right for them. But what I want to communicate is that there's a way to heal from trauma that doesn't require you to stomp through the swamp of the past. And that, in fact, from the perspective that I work from, the danger of that is that you can simply reinforce those neurological pathways by talking about it and ruminating in it. And the opportunity is to re-harness all the energy that's been invested, all the attention, all the neural pathways that have been invested in those memories and that screen door that you're looking at life through. And you can actually just open the door through the portal of your heart and see directly right here, right now, what's happening. In my own case, I was plagued with memories that weren't even mine and that I didn't understand. I couldn't engage in a relationship or intimacy or sensuality or kiss someone without a wall of images of children being sexually abused coming in front of my eyes, and I couldn't understand it. Until I started practicing heart math and using a tool that we teach in the intermediate course called attitude breathing, where I really committed to harnessing my attention and bringing my love to the present moment and my compassion to myself and to those images that came to me, when I realized that it was my time from working with street children in the war zone, and that deeply, I worked and lived in the war zone when I was a teenager, long before I ever had a boyfriend or kissed anyone, and so... my own sexual conditioning, which, by the way, sexuality being part of productivity or procreation of our species, is so inextricably linked to the midbrain that it's a particularly vulnerable arena for us to drive into survival mode and just be in looping patterns, rather than being available to the present moment. And that's exactly what happened to me. As a teenager, my brain just fixated and created what's called a neural association between sexuality and abuse, even though I didn't experience it physically, just from seeing it and coming into contact with it with children when I was a teenager. And so I couldn't, it took consciously shifting my own association to sexuality to an expression of love and care that allowed it to become an expression of my heart because of my choice. And so what's interesting is all of us are walking around hijacked by these types of memories all day, every day, standing at the photocopier when our boss walks by, and a week ago we were caught, you know, photocopying something for our band and we got in trouble. And we may not even know it, but we get flushed and we react and we're in defensive mode because our boss is walking by and we're photocopying banners for our job, right?
Right, but you still have the flinch reaction.
The flinch reaction, exactly. And this is what stress is. It's going on inside us. It doesn't really have to do with our environment or circumstances.
And you know what I have to say? I'm curious. I just want to ask you, because you mentioned it way back in the conversation, is we talked about the environment that a kid is when they're sexually abused. And there's, in my case, going back to my case, it was my stepfather who was in the house and my mother. And I was saying, you know, that both people contribute to that environment. And I understand with my mother that she was also abused, and that you're talking about fracturing her and rendering her triggered, and you know there was a lot of stuff going on for her that made her unable to deal with the present moment that she was in, and thus my sister and I got abused. I love my mother. She's an amazing person. She's done a lot of great things for a lot of human beings, but she was hijacked by that. Help me to, what I'm curious about is I've never talked to any perpetrators, and you were saying you have worked with them.
Mm-hmm.
And help me to understand that. And do you think it's possible for them to heal?
Absolutely. I know it is. And, of course, most perpetrators of sexual abuse, as we see even from 5-year-olds who are abusing 2-year-olds, right? You and I talked about that a week ago, I think, Bonnie.
Yeah, most perpetrators were sexually abused. That's what I heard at the center that I was at, too, is that often they had a special interview room for the perpetrators, and they said often they're sitting there telling you everything because they're just victims, too.
Exactly. And so the question is, where does the buck stop, right? And so...
But just help me for a minute to just, because I can't really comprehend it at all. Tell me for a minute, what
as you
happens
can imagine,
in somebody's brain?
Yeah, one of my personal mandates, it sounds so melodramatic, I don't mean it to be, but something I'm passionate about from the heart is contributing to ending the child sex trade, which is among the largest of industries on our planet. And I got this passion from living and working in the Nicaraguan war zone when I was 19 and seeing children sold as sex slaves and wanting to rescue them from that, from the heart. Just, you know, my heart leapt out at that. And so because it's a hot button for me, when I did my first session for a perpetrator of sexual abuse, it was one of the most difficult things that I've ever experienced, and I never would have been able to do it without the tools from HeartMath. And interestingly enough, I just used one tool from HeartMath. It was all I could muster. Well, two tools that we teach in the beginner workshop, neutral and the communication tool. And I worked it every second of that 2-hour session. Because as soon as it became clear that what this person was here for was to, for themselves, just like you're asking this question now, Bonnie, they were asking the same question. They couldn't understand why they did what they did.
What goes on in my brain when I do this?
What goes on in any of me? And the shame that a sexual abuse person carries, well, perpetrators also carry that. In fact, it's one of the ways they're trying unconsciously to discharge their own shame, is to give it to somebody else, but it doesn't work. It just amplifies, as you described the environment so beautifully, Bonnie, it amplifies the chaos rather than brings order, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as his intention became clear to understand this in himself, I had to find a neutrality in me. It took every fiber of my being to really get neutral and find compassion for this human being in front of me and not attack him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had built so much of my own personality, if you will, my own ego, around protecting children from someone like this.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I don't know if anyone else listening, but I have a bias that they can't be helped. It's like lock them up, you know, give them a chemical, gelding.
Castration.
Yeah, castration or whatever, but don't expect them to go back and not do it again. And I know that that's, I know it's unchristian, I know it's, but I, so that's why I'm asking, is because I find it really hard.
Well,
to be compassionate.
And this call is really, I want to keep the purpose of this call clear, which is for the listeners to find their own heart in relationship to whatever this call is about for you. If you've suffered sexual abuse, the main thing I want to communicate to you is that it doesn't have to dictate your future, even if it has owned your past. That there is freedom from that in the heart. And if you're a perpetrator of sexual abuse and you're listening to this call, it's the same message. There's freedom for you here. And so in answer to your question, Bonnie, when someone's under stress, there's a phenomenon called cortical inhibition where the frontal lobes of the brain, which is our thinking brain that makes us different from other animals, right? Shut down. And this is how smart people can do stupid things when they're stressed. And it's also how people can do stuff and not remember that they did it. And so that part of the brain is the part of the brain that dictates behavior discernment. So what ended up unfolding in this situation with the perpetrator of sexual abuse, where I just kept going to neutral and reflecting back to him what I heard him say, what he discovered in that session as we kept using the heart math tools, was that this was his way of trying to understand his own sexual abuse, that it was stuck in him, lodged in him, as something that owned his mind. And the only way he could somehow relate to understanding his abuser was to become his abuser, to do what had been done to him, to kind of complete a circle. Just like basic behavior imitation, right? How do we learn how to walk? How do we learn how to do anything? We imitate those that we learn from. And this is one of the areas of rehabilitation or support that has been my joy and pleasure to offer people. I've worked with many people who suffered from sexual abuse whose greatest fear is having children because they're terrified they'll do the same thing to their own children. And so, again, the communication is your past doesn't equal your future. It only does in your midbrain, which is the part of your brain that does pattern repetition and looping. And that part of your brain is designed to serve you, not the other way around. It was actually created in our evolution for our survival so that, you know, if a tiger ate Uncle Harry yesterday, that pattern recognition portion of our brain, when it sees something that looks like a tiger today, goes, shit, run. I just swore on my own heart start call. Sorry, guys. And then, right? But it's like that pattern recognition is designed for our survival.
Mm-hmm.
When it kicks in and loops in these memories that take control of our present moment and don't allow us a heartfelt experience right here, right now, that's when it's hijacked us and we become slaves to the part of us that was designed to protect us. And that can be reversed. We know that just at a physiological level, as you learn how to create order in the heart rhythm, which you can also measure, by the way, we have biofeedback technologies called the M-Wave and the M-Wave PC, where you can see your heart rhythm in real time. And that helps coach you into that order in the heart, which then we know opens up the higher perceptual centers of the brain and gives you the ability to discern and consciously choose your behavior. So whether you overeat when you're depressed or whether you have this compulsion to abuse another person in some way or other, you can gain inner dominion over that compulsion.
Or the compulsion to abuse yourself.
Which anytime we're abusing another, we're abusing ourselves.
That's true. I think that I think for me more the sense of abuse wasn't something that I wanted to turn on other people, but that something that I turned on myself more. And again, it's that survival thing, is a sense of shutting down my emotions and driving myself and pushing myself really hard. It was funny, I was reflecting earlier today on being at Oxford University. I was a Rhodes Scholar. And I had first applied before I got there. So I won the Rhodes Scholarship. So I'm, you know, one of 32 Americans. I'm an honors graduate from Harvard. And then I get rejected from my degree program. So even though I'm at the best grades from Harvard, I'm doing all this stuff, Oxford said, no, you're not good enough to be in the government program, in the politics program. Mm-hmm. So I got the rejection. And then when I arrived at school, they just enrolled me into some other program I didn't want to be in. So I said, I'm going to go and reapply to economics. And then a few weeks later, I got rejected from that too. So here I am going through all these rejections of my academic ability. And so at that point, when I got that second rejection, I, like, declared martial law on myself.
Mm.
And I said, okay, no more extracurriculars, no more, it's like, no more having fun. You're going to buckle down and you're going to do this degree. And when I look back on it, it was so unnecessary. I could have just done the undergraduate politics and economics degree. It would have been easy. It was exactly like the degree I did at Harvard. I would have aced through it. I could have just enjoyed punting on the Thames, making friends, you know, doing whatever. But oh no, I wasn't going to take the easy route.
Mm-hmm.
not me. And in the end, it made no difference.
Mm.
And so stuff like that where I sort of beat up on myself or drive myself in a way that isn't necessary.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely that, you know, predatory midbrain, right? That's like, okay, all the things you described about glomming on to some one thing and fixating there as that as your source of survival, safety, and security. You can know those fixations are not the heart, right? They're not your higher perceptual centers, which have, as you're describing now, Bonnie, a more open approach and a more balanced approach to life. So that fixating on whether it's on your academic performance and being perfect or whether it's on your marriage or whether it's on money, all those fixations. And for someone who perpetrates abuse, it tends to be the abuse relationship that they fixate on, right? And so what can be here for this but compassion for this old survival mechanism that's running our bodies in a time when really we're not experiencing that many physical threats? Like you're saying, Bonnie, you could afford to go punt the ball around the Thames, right, or whatever.
Actually, punching on the Thames is like, it's like being in Venice with the boats and pushing it with a stick.
Oh,
yeah, which I did do
my share
of punting later on. But I wasn't, here I was, I felt like things have gone wrong, so I'm going to fix it by being really hard on myself.
By being perfect, yeah. And harsh, yeah.
Yeah, it's being harsh on myself. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people who've had trauma of whatever kind, and you turn that negativity inwards.
Well, the other quality to that, of course, is that, you see, the survival mechanisms in our body brain, this sort of pattern recognition part of the brain, is designed to look to things, especially pattern recognition, for its sense of safety and security and comfort, right? So familiarity is where it derives its sense of reference point for safety and comfort and stability. So if you've suffered or experienced a lot of abuse or negative, negative environments or harshness coming at you, one of the challenges to overcome and one of the gifts of the heart, because it overcomes that, is your body-mind physiology habituates to that harshness towards yourself as safe, as familiar.
Right.
So in
and
fact,
what do you do in a crisis?
Right. In a crisis, you go, oh, my God, we've got to go back to what's safe and known, which is being hard on myself, which is being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And without a perpetrator there, you become your own perpetrator because it's familiar. And so you can look back on that and recognize that now. And see that the heart is able to break that code, break that curse, so that you can actually respond to a crisis with a heart of compassion towards yourself in the moment.
One of the heart math tools that I love is the tool of being able to focus on the heart, to look at a decision that you would make. And like when I made that decision to declare martial law on myself in Oxford University, when you sit down with a decision and you write down, here's my decision, here's how I feel about it, here's why I'm doing it. And then if you sit down and you really focus on the heart and you do the heart math, heart focus tools, and then you say, okay, what kind of decision do I want to make now? You're making a decision from a different place, and you come up with different decisions, and you're able to literally change the kinds of decisions you make in a minute.
Yes, I love that. That's called the perception shift tool. Bonnie, we saw that pan out as well. This is really why you came to me in the beginning, right, in your relationships, where you found yourself attracting relationships that were kind of mirrors or familiar repetitions of some of the abusive patterns of your past, right?
And then you get triggered by it. And I was trying to remember exactly what we did. I remember there was one session you were really helping me to cleanse out of my nervous system some stuff that was trapped there where I was just scared in my nervous system. And it's like logically I knew that I was okay, but it was like we had to get it out of my nervous system.
Right, which is that the what's called the hijacking, we've used that word, right, where the emotional memories hijack the body into believing it's in a dangerous threat right now, even if it's not. And so the heart has the ability through the ordered pattern that you can learn to create to communicate to the brain, the nervous system, and the hormones that you're actually okay right now, you're safe. And then as you're describing, Bonnie, you can re-examine a situation from the clarity and coherence and order of a present heart, and it allows you to respond more effectively. I want to honor your time, Bonnie. We are right at edging up against 6 o'clock, and I'd like to open up the call in a minute here for anyone to ask questions or share their own stories. But before I do, is there anything else you want to add or share? I mean, I feel like, well, as I said, we could just stay on the phone with you for a year. You're such a wealth of resource and insight and inspiration. I appreciate you so much, Bonnie.
I think just to affirm for people that whatever trauma you're going through, whether it's mild or big or generational or anything that you're going through, just to affirm that there is a door to walk through to get to the other side. And we can say some of these heart math tools are easy, and they are, but having the courage to actually do it takes hope. You know, you have to actually hope, and you actually have to believe. And you have to be willing to admit that there's something wrong. You know, if you want to stay in martial law, you know, I stayed there for years, you know, and I thought that was normal, and I was very successful, you know. So if you have to be willing to admit that there is a better life, and then to take the steps and do it, and that's not easy. You know, the heart math tool itself may be the easiest thing in the world, but to actually do it may be a big thing for you. But there's hope.
And there's also support for that, by the way. It's one of the reasons we've created these calls and also the Heart Mastery Program, which is a year-long program where you're surrounded by people who are also going for living from the heart so that you have support of people confirming your choice and saying, you know, go for it, you can do it. You know, as you're saying that, Bonnie, it occurred to me something that you and I talked about when we originally came up with the idea of offering this call was also letting people know who are recovering from or living with trauma in their past of any sort, but in particular sexual abuse trauma, that so many people walk around with a kind of stigma or a shame that there's something wrong with them because of that, and they keep it under wraps for so long. And then as they start to express it, there's this expectation that somehow, oh, okay, well, once I don't have these memories anymore, or once this isn't a part of me, then I'll be a whole good person. And as I've worked with people, a big part of finding the heart in the midst of this is recognizing that that will always be a part of who you are, and it's
right.
Not a bad thing.
I remember going through that, too, as I was going through a lot of the healing work, and I realized one day that I was never going to arrive at the place where it never happened to me.
Right.
You know, and I thought, like, if I get enough healing, it's like you can erase it. And I finally realized, oh, I'm not going to become the person I would have been if it had never happened to me.
That's so powerful.
That's not what's going to happen.
I think that's so important for all of us to hear, whether you tyrannize yourself with a past failure or, you know, past abuse or whatever it is, you will never arrive at being the person who didn't experience that.
Right.
As if somehow that's the goal. It's not the goal. In fact, you know, if anything, in my own experience, you arrive at a place where you appreciate yourself so much for being the type of person that came through it the way you did.
And to be able to be strong and joyful, despite the fact that you will continue to have hijacking moments, despite
right.
the fact that, so you continue to get the chance to show your courageousness.
And make the choice, right? I think that's really the key, what you just said, that we wanted to communicate, was that it's not about arriving at a place where you're never hijacked by your survival physiology. And boy, am I ever a poster child for that, right? I mean, here I am teaching these tools and living and breathing and loving this work 24/7 for over 15 years. And yet still, you know, when I come home late at night after feeling sick to my stomach and I find a Hummer in my parking space, I get mad. I get hijacked. And it's okay. It's not about never being hijacked by past memories or by your survival emotions and that kind of thing. It's about how you respond to it when you are hijacked.
Being able to rise above it.
Yeah, and also you had such a beautiful analogy that I think one of the people you interviewed on your online television show, which we should also let people know about, called Live Your Joy, you interviewed a trauma therapist who mentioned that it's like, you know, you can be driving along the freeway and of your brain, and you know everything's good, and there's beautiful flowers on the side of the road, and life is great, and you're listening to good music, and suddenly it's as if you, when you get hijacked by these trauma memories, your car turned off an exit into the wrong part of
like
town.
You accidentally got off the freeway in the wrong place.
Ooh.
It's dark, and all of a sudden, you know, there's shadowy figures, and you're like, whoa, how did I get here?
Menacing people walking by with crowbars.
And when he described it, his book is called The Trauma Zone, and thank you for saying that. So I have my own web TV and radio show at BonnieSt.John.com where I interview people and bring a lot of great information.
I've actually been one of your interviews.
And Sheva was one of the great people that I brought. And he talks about this, about falling into the trauma zone, and I gravitated towards this so much because I know that for the rest of my life that this happens to me, is I fall into the trauma zone. I drive into the bad neighborhood on accident, and the key is knowing how to get out. It's not that you're never going to do that again. It's knowing how to get out.
Yes, exactly. And this is one of the things that's so important to communicate. It's like you can't, the thing that gets people trapped in the bad part of town in their brain is when they make it mean that somehow they're a failure for being there. And it really doesn't mean that at all. It's so, you know, you and Bonnie, as we talked about last week's call, Bonnie's whole original message was the key to success is not never falling down. It's how quick you get up when you do.
That's the quote that's on the Starbucks cup.
I love that.
They put a quote from me on millions of Starbucks cups that talked about getting up faster when you fall down.
Right, and if you want to know the whole story to that, you should listen to the December 31st, 2007 Heart Start call where we shared that whole story. And Bonnie, what we need to do definitely is bring you back. Let's talk about prayer and the heart. And a heart start call with you
call.
In your book. I'd love to do that.
So are we going to open it up for questions?
Yeah. Does that feel good? Anything
yeah.
else you want to add before we do? Well, let's open up the line. Make sure if you have a question for me or for Bonnie or both of us, or if you have a story of your own that you want to share, just press *6 if you've muted yourself so that you unmute and you're not talking into your kitchen and not us. Anybody have a question or a story they want to share? Maybe while we're letting people percolate that, we can all take a moment just to focus our attention in the area around the heart. And allow the breath to come in through the area around your heart. And out through the area around your heart. Whether you've suffered sexual abuse or perpetrated sexual abuse or any other type of abuse or not, we've all been abusive in this life, because I think anywhere where there's an absence of compassion towards ourselves and others, there's abuse. And that abuse is so often at its core genuine caring. We care so much about something in life that it gets carried too far and causes harm. And so coming to the heart is a chance to come home to the true care behind all things. And just letting yourself touch in that in yourself right now. To forgive yourself where you've been abusive to yourself and others, and to offer compassion to yourself where you've abused yourself and been abused by others. Similarly, at the end of these Heart Start calls, we always like to pay it forward so you can now extend this compassion beyond you to someone you see in the world that could benefit from hearing some of what Bonnie and I shared tonight, from the hope that Bonnie's offering. Bonnie, your show is called Live Your Joy. Would you say that your life is joyful? Have you found the place beyond the...
You know, what's interesting is my next book that I'm writing will be entitled Live Your Joy, just like the radio show on my website and the TV web show. And I'm going through right now, working with my editor and everything on it, and my secret terror is that I know absolutely nothing about joy. It's not that my life is joyful, ha ha ha, all the time, and I run around being joyful. I think it's that I'm interested in it, and I learn about it, and I struggle with it, and I think it's not something that you're done with. Mm. And that's kind of the theme of what we've been talking about is I have joy. I definitely have joy in my life. I have wonderful moments. I love my daughter. I'm in a wonderful relationship. I have a wonderful community. I have a lot of joy in my life, but it doesn't, there's always things that come up. There's always things that can stress me. There's always things that can hijack me. I always have fears. And so it's a constant dance of going back and forth. And that's essentially what the book is about living that dance. And I think that's what heart math is about. It's about committing to the disciplines of keeping ourselves in joy, despite the fact that there's so many things that can take us away from that.
Yeah, I think really what I'm hearing you say is that joy is a choice.
Joy is a choice. And it's a bit of a discipline. It's
a discipline.
Taking action and remembering, you know, remembering that you have that choice in moments of terror or crisis or Hummers in your driveway.
That's right. And it takes muscle to make that choice. There's no question. I mean, the heart math is science that proves it. You know, the heart is a muscle, and you can condition that muscle to joy. And you can also condition that muscle to easier choose joy and be supported in an environment that helps you do that. There's no question about it.
Right. And so you have certainly made a big difference in me exercising my joy muscles. That's why I'm on the call.
I can see we'll do the next infomercial, right?
like your joy muscles.
Instead of, what is it, like the thigh master and the ab master.
That's funny. That's right. You just have to come up with a machine that you can that looks very active. You know,
well,
the M-Wave.
M-Wave.
It's just not active enough. You need something that looks more like the thigh master, your joy muscle.
That's right. So at least it has the appearance of that, you know, boot camp struggle.
Yeah. It's just not enough struggle in the M-Wave. Too easy. Come on.
Yes. Ease. If you'd like to find out what it's like to live from ease, come find out about the heart. And for those who are listening, tomorrow night we have another free call. Once a month we do a free webinar introducing you to the actual science and tools so that you can learn those. And you, if you haven't registered for that and would like to, you can do it on the homepage of the Sierra site, which is flikefantasticyera.com, www.sierra.com. And if you have questions that you don't want shared on the recording, this call in particular, I know some people requested this call, by the way, and if you have questions that you'd like to put forth anonymously, you can email those to me directly, Sheva, S like Sam, H, E like elephant, V like victory, A, at Sierra.com, or call me at 310-581-1507. And Bonnie also has something she calls her circle of friends, which is regular emails that she sends out and resources, and her online TV shows get announced in them, and just phenomenal, phenomenal opportunity and support, absolutely free, again, to help you strengthen your joy muscle.
Yeah.
So you want to tell them how to join your circle of friends, Bonnie?
Oh, it's easy. You just go to BonnieStJohn.com, and all you have to do is put in your name and email. You don't have to do a long registration thing or anything, and then you'll get the notices. And we're going to have a whole new lineup of TV shows, and our TV shows are 5 to 7 minutes, so they're easy to do, and you can do them anytime you want because they're on the Internet. And it's just a lot of great food about how to live your life better. There's one about how to fight and make up. And there's one about women's friendships and how they make a big difference for your health. And in this context, we can say for your heart health, that it's how women's friendships, how to have them, what to do, what not to do, so that they do support your joy and your heart health. And just lots of really good food from wonderful people and good energy. So sign up, and you'll get our notices, and you'll hear about the radio. You can listen to the radio show, you can listen to the TV show, and just join in.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us. Definitely want to do a couple more Heart Start calls with you. One for your book as well. I think that would be really great.
And we can talk about prayer and the heart and how those fit together.
Absolutely. I think that would make a great call. And I so appreciate you being here tonight, and thank you all for
Is there time for a comment?
Yeah, sure. Dive in.
This is Becky Fisher. Bonnie, I want to thank you so much. This has been absolutely wonderful. I appreciate everything you've said and done, and I've learned a tremendous amount, and several things you've said about the timing of your daughter's age and triggering the anxiety and things have helped me figure things out, and things about how your marriage became the thing that helped you kind of hold your world together has helped me figure out that I did the same things, and I was feeling stupid for taking years to see some things that were abusive in my marriage and wondering why, and I realized that it was just because it was so important to me that I couldn't let myself see them, because it was the thing that was holding me together, and also that I've always felt that I will write something, and that it will involve all of the things, abuses and things in my past, and yet I tell myself then, well, who would want to hear that, and I don't want it to sound like a sob story and things, and yet you have served as such a wonderful, wonderful role model of how your story is a part of your courageous journey, that you're sharing everything that is so wonderful and healing and hopeful for so many people, and I can see how it all fits together to be something very, very healing for so many people, and it helps me. It helps me to understand a huge part of me and my role, and I'm nowhere near as accomplished as you, but also I love the part that even though everyone else would view you and does view you, I'm sure, as a tremendously accomplished person, that you so humbly speak of yourself as a work in progress, and yet you still have the courage to put yourself out there and share all these wonderful things to help so many people. And I want to thank you.
Well, thank you. That's really wonderful to hear. It sounds like we have a lot in common, and so I would say you should definitely go get the book, How Strong Women Pray, because there's a lot of my prayer journey and my spiritual journey and my healing journey around this whole issue is woven throughout the whole book, and so you'll hear a lot more of the kind of detail you were saying helped you is in the book, too, to talk about going through the therapy and how it affected my relationship with my daughter, and I did end up getting divorced and how that happened, and all that stuff that's really hard. So I think you'd get a lot out of that. And I just wanted to say, too, the speaking out, it was really hard to write that in the book. And I thought I was going to be fine because I've given speeches on it and stuff, but then I wrote it all in the book, and then I was getting ready to go out on the book tour. And I tell you, I had panic attacks of having to go out there and speak about it. And I had a lot of fear, but I had a lot of support. So I think it's very healing to speak out, to break the taboo, to break the silence. But you need a lot of support to do it too.
Thank you.
And I think the more of us who do it, the more it frees the rest of us.
And you've done it in such a powerful, loving, strong way.
Well, I just want to affirm you in writing your story and doing with it whatever you are moved to do, whatever is right to do with it. And if you write it just for yourself, just the process of writing it would be huge. You know, and then if you whatever comes of it is going to be good, I'm sure. So I just want to affirm that too.
It always felt like somehow it would be for others, but I didn't understand how that could possibly be. But you've shown me that is absolutely true, and I want to thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Becky.
Sheva, I'm going to turn into a pumpkin. I got to put my daughter to bed.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Bonnie, and thank you all for joining us on the call. And I look forward to having you on next week's Heart Start call, and we'll definitely be sure to get Bonnie back.
Thank you, Sheva. Big hug. It's always so wonderful to be in your energy, and it really does support me. and give me strength.
Well, it's mutual, my dear. So thank you, you are, and to all of you, thank you, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.